pre-recorded version of the WTGA Roundtable on WTGA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. This is recorded, though, so if you call in, nobody will answer you.
And we are back here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTK.com, Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub on the other side of the county, as you know. MGoBlog.com comes on Thursday, 9 o'clock hour, starting with the guy who runs the show over at MGoBlog, Mr. Brian Cook. Brian, how you doing, man?
Hello. Good. Well. How's
right.
it going?
Got some time between what we saw last Saturday and now. It's time to move on, right?
Not enough time, Sam.
I hear you. One of your right-hand men over at MGoBlog, Seth Fisher, as well. Seth, how you doing?
We got hockey tonight, so pretty good.
Man, and didn't they look fantastic? You talk about living up to the hype. We will certainly kind of lift our spirits talking about that a little bit. Then, of course, the venerable one himself, Craig Ross. Craig, how are you?
We had him, so he's having some audio issues, and now he has no phone, so I'm going to have to go get him back on. We'll get Craig in a second. Hold on.
Okay, there. We'll get Craig in a second. So, fellas, I can't say that I certainly didn't pick Michigan to win last Saturday's game against Wisconsin. I didn't give him much of a chance when I found out all of the guys that were going to be missing, and yet I didn't expect for the loss to be as bad as it wound up being. And so it's against that backdrop and the backdrop of all the commentary on it this week that I allow you guys the opportunity to voice your opinions and or frustrations with what you saw last week, starting with you, Brian.
Well, I mean, I think we're at the it is what it is point, right? Like 49-11 against Wisconsin, not actually that close spiritually. You know, you have probably your five best players from this roster heading into the year sitting out of this one. So there's some mitigating factors, but also, you know, there's one Cam McGrone stick in the like second quarter, maybe the third quarter, where he to the spot and made a nice tackle. And that was a nice play. And it just kind of reinforced to me how much we're not seeing that from Michigan's entire back seven on a regular basis. And it just kind of feels like nobody really knows what they're doing on offense or defense. And part of that is you've got a lot of new players, you got a lot of injuries, but I think there's something a little bit deeper there. This is a team that doesn't have any confidence.
Mm-hmm. Seth?
Yeah, I usually do not subscribe to any of the, you know, side things like, oh, the effort's not there, that kind of stuff, right? Like, it's just too hard to, like, for someone on our level to go and look at. But I had enough old guys contacting me this week and saying, the way that Michigan came out and touched the banner told them how the game was going to go. And I'm like, well, I guess you can see that, but I can see that thing in the play. So, like, I can't tell, you know, the difference between how someone touched the banner or whatnot, but I can tell that when the linebackers are stepping down and not getting outside when the play is going outside, it's because they're afraid the defensive tackle is going to get, like, ripped. They don't trust each other out there. And I think that's, you know...
Or should they?
But yeah, like the program is just the wholesale. Everything's falling apart because they're not playing football. They're not out there like running their own systems.
Craig Ross, we got you.
Yeah, I think I'm here. Yep. The touch the banner thing is interesting to me because I had a friend I played basketball with who broke his foot touching the banner, and it was the only game he played in his career at the end of the game with a broken foot. But that's probably not salient to the conversation. What I did was through the recruiting rating of the Wisconsin team, and it was their defensive tackles in number 1238, and the rest of the team is in the four.
Hey, Craig, can I interrupt you because you kind of sound like Mary Sue Coleman there.
Oh, I was going to say Luke Craig, but you went for that reference.
Get an echo from the phone coming through there. Unfortunately, Craig, that we weren't able to get to the reference. But, hey, I did find myself saying at halftime of the game, because, you know, look, the outcome is not anywhere close to being in doubt when you're down 28 to nothing, right? And I made the remark at that time that reduced to just wanting to see, you know, fight, just seeing, you know, some dog. You're going to lose this game, but how you lose it is still in your control. And I just, you know, seeing some things, I mean, you know, seeing them go right up the middle and basically go untouched for like an 8 or 9 yard touchdown. And then, you know, late in the game, they run a full back belly play and get like 40 yards on it. And it's like, you know, at that point, you just know. Full back like, coming through clean.
That's like the Tom Hanks scene in the movie where the guy's like, I'm the captain now. And like, it's like, we're the Rutgers now. Bad news.
Yeah, yeah. So they do have to, for that intangible thing, and you can hear it in some of the comments, even from them after the game. I mean, you look, even if you can't, you know, identify it yourself, you can take it from their comments. When Cam McGrone said, I think the question was like, you know, is there a culture issue? Something along those lines. He said, I think we have a lackadaisical culture. And when you hear Harbaugh say, hey, we got to identify the guys that, you know, play with pride in themselves and fight like hell for Michigan. I think that implies something. You know, to say that implies that you aren't seeing that in some places, enough places for it to be called out publicly. And then I thought Sean Newell was even more emphatic where he said, where is the pride? He said, I mean, he said that in his interview, where is the pride? So that's not just a player thing, guys. That's a you know, a coaching thing as well. Identifying the guys that can show you that in practice, even if they aren't captains, and elevating that to the point where they can show it on the field and give it to some of the other guys, even if there's some younger guys, even if there's some to the point now where you got to look at that wherever you can get it, whether it's a young guy or a walk-on or what have you. That's not something that you should be questioning on game days.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's, I mean, you can talk about pride, but also it's about just knowing what you're supposed to do. So we have miss IDs on offense. We have guys vacating zones on defense. We have DJ Turner, who comes in, is in very good position, and then straight up tackles a wide receiver. Like, I mean, to me, it's not pride. It's that the guys on the team aren't very good, and the coaching is not putting them in positions where they get easy wins. And it's tough to do that sometimes, because when you can't do much stuff, the easy wins are like passes into the flat that are very well covered. But also, you know, this is a second game in a row where I don't think we saw a post-snap read the whole game. And there was a couple incidents where Wisconsin's blitzing and they completely ignore Chris Evans on flare motion and he's wide open. And because you don't have a post-snap read in the offense, that's not going anywhere, because it's just a quarterback run from Milton that's minus one in the box. So, you know, it's, I mean, at some point, yeah, there's, I guess, pride that factors in, but mostly this is just a disorganized team, and it shows it every week.
Yeah, it jumped out to me in a couple of places. We'll talk about the quarterback position, and where clearly, you know, I think everyone thought that Joe had a strong first game. When I went back and looked at game two and three, I thought that, you know, the criticism wasn't in line with how he performed. It certainly wasn't on the level of Minnesota, but I thought he did more good things than bad in both of those games. But this game, he just was definitely completely rattled. And you saw it on the, I mean, past the first interception that was not his fault, where you had, you know, a catchable ball that should have been caught, wound up being tipped up for an interception. You know, you started seeing the bad eyes from that point on, the interception all the way down to when they pulled him, when he threw into the teeth of a cover two, you know, a cover two safety, where, you know, the receiver is literally running down the hash. The safety doesn't even have to go anywhere, and they pulled him after that. So you see that, but I think what magnifies the pressure on him is there's just literally no help. And you think about the one time where he had some momentum, that drive before before the half, right, where they actually put together a drive. They get in the red zone. Chris Evans gets tackled before he crosses the – it was the right call. And then they come in, guys, and they have a quarterback run play that I literally do not know. And then we've said this a lot. I literally do not know what some of the guys up front were doing on that play, starting with the tight end who blew the whole thing up.
Who stepped
the wrong way on the play and blocked essentially, I'm just totally blew up the blocking. If he steps the right way on the play, then the play has a very good chance. I don't know the future. You can't say that it definitely would have worked, but it had no chance because of what your tight end did on that play. And that happens enough to say that, man, they just, you can't single out that guy or that play because we see that one guy. It might be a different guy on every play enough this season to say that they just cannot find consistency from practice to games. And I don't know how you fix that.
I don't think you do. I mean, not in a week, not in 2 weeks, not in 3 weeks. So this is what it is. And Michigan's going to be under 500 this year. And that's year six of a coaching regime. And you can see all the decisions that got them where they are. And it's like, well, where do we go from here? I know what I'd do, but
what would you do?
So let's start over. I mean, like,
what would you do right now?
Right now?
Right now. Yes, right now.
If I was the athletic director?
Oh, no. I'm talking about what would you do on a team? We could talk athletic. We could talk
on a team.
We'll talk big picture after this. What would you do right now? They seem to be trending towards a quarterback change.
Yeah, because that's great. that's gonna fix it. I mean, it's not gonna fix anything. There's a reason he was the third string quarterback, and there's a reason that Dylan McCaffrey isn't on this roster. And if you're four games into a season and you're switching quarterbacks and you ran your number one going into this season off, or he just doesn't want to be on this roster because it's hard to keep guys in Ann Arbor, like, there's no fixing this. I mean, you might get incrementally better. You might beat Rutgers. You'll probably beat Rutgers. But like, you're looking at this game and you're like, how big is this spread going to be? Is it going to be 28 points? And that's an unacceptable place for Michigan football to be in year six of a coaching regime.
Seth?
I mean, there's not a whole lot of things that they can do because the level of disaster right now is just so high that, like, you can't just fix one thing. You switch the quarterback around. I don't think that's going to change anything. You know, it's an attempt at a quick fix that's not going to fix it. What you have to do is say, here's who we are. Let Gattis run the offense. Gattis was brought in to run the offense. They recruited some guys for him to be able to run the offense he wants to. Gattis, call it your plays are, make your game. We're going to use reads because that's going to make things easier on our quarterback and it's going to make things easier on our running game. And that's who we're going to be. Maybe we're not going to like take some of the ceiling off and say, this is what we do. On defense, get back to the fundamentals and just say, this is what we do. If your defensive tackles get beat up, they're going to get beat up. That's not your job anymore. Your job is to do your job. I mean, that's the only thing they can do. You have to give yourself a floor. Because a floor this season will actually maybe get you some wins. It might get you past Penn State even. It could get you past Rutgers. If you keep on screwing around and you keep on taking these risks that don't do anything for the future of the program, I don't think you're giving yourself much of a chance to win. I think you're giving yourself more of a chance to lose.
Yeah, I see it a couple of different ways in the short term. The quarterback thing, you got to give Cade McNamara credit. He came in and he did move him right down the football field. He was decisive. He was accurate. I think that it is, if this is the way they're going to go, then I think they need to go that way at every position because I don't think that Joe played poorly in all the games. I think he played poorly in the Wisconsin game. Again, great against Minnesota. Okay against Michigan State, okay against Indiana, poorly against Wisconsin. There are guys who haven't been taken out of the lineup that played poorly in at least three games, and they were still run out there. So if Joe is going to sit down, and we'll see, then do that at all the positions in which we've seen struggle. And then let's see if some of the young guys or some of the guys who have been in backup roles with greater opportunities can help improve the play, can help improve the intensity, and if they have issues, which it's predictable that they're going to make mistakes, if those mistakes are more functional for them, if they are things that they can grow from either in season or grow from for the long term, that's what I call full developmental mode. And you know, it tells me if you're going to make that move at quarterback, it remains to be seen if they actually will. But if you're going to make that move, then I think you got to be thinking like that everywhere.
I just don't know if there's the people to put in these positions. There are no scholarship backup linebackers.
Well, I'm trying Zach Carpenter at center. I'm trying Trevor Keegan at left guard. I'm giving Khalil Mulling some time at linebacker. I'm trying some of the young guys at corner. I'm trying all those guys right now, because what do you have to lose?
To Rutgers.
I don't want to say it. I don't want to say it, Seth. Why'd you say it?
Because I've just been previewing Rutgers all week, and
you're not a sound mind.
Well, geez, man, like they've got a coach that they believe in again. So like Rutgers had some talented players, and they're just an absolute disaster for years because they don't play for each other. They don't know what they're doing out there. They're always trying new things, or they're like stuck on one idea because it's the only thing they know that works. And people were bailing, and the program was an absolute mess, and Michigan got to go in and take whatever they wanted to out of that fenced garden. And for right now, I think Rutgers is, I don't think Shiano's going to have long-term success, but at the moment, they feel like they're having success. And watching that team play their game when they feel like they're having success, after watching Michigan get hammered by Wisconsin, when Wisconsin was still out some of their players, right? Like, they weren't as bad a shape as us, but I think that Wisconsin is certainly missing some important guys, and it didn't matter. And even if you had all of our guys, I don't think it mattered. And watching that kind of, the way that the team is playing right now, you can't fix it by just changing things around just for the sake of changing them around. I think you have to say, here's what we do. I think you have to play the players who do that the best and call it at that. If you have weaknesses, you got weaknesses.
Well, I think we've seen the struggles be persistent enough with the guys that play to be able to say that there is a level that is being exhibited on the field that, you said, what's your floor? I can't imagine that the floor for the guys who aren't playing is much lower than that. So why not inject them in? And I don't look, am I suggesting that guys who have shown a complete and utter lack of readiness to be out on the football field that you should throw those guys out there? No. But in instances where guys have been getting run with the ones in practice all week, I mean, if they're getting run with the ones in practice all week, why not give them a shot in the game? I mean, that to me is the point that you're at, especially, like I said, I mean, if you're talking about changing your quarterback who hasn't struggled as mightily as some of the other guys that have been playing, then that tells me that you are in that mindset. You are in that mold that we need to try something different. We need to be trying some of the other guys that, again, it's, let's see what they do with an opportunity. Maybe they come in and they have a Cade McNamara moment. You don't know it until you try it. And so, again, you say you could lose to Rutgers, but they could lose to Rutgers with the guys that have been playing, too. I mean, do you feel like the odds of winning go down considerably by taking out the guys that have been playing significantly? I just don't.
I mean, I don't know. You can make that argument either way, but also, like, if the guys aren't playing, there's probably – they've had a 3-month camp. This is more data than you usually get in practice, and it feels like the guys who are behind, who haven't been mentioned, are probably behind for a reason. I mean, sure, rotate some guys in, see what happens, go for it. But I don't see a way out, really.
Yeah, well, and maybe it's not a way out. You know, maybe it's just a way forward.
Sure.
To kind of see. I mean, you're trying to figure out what you have too, right? I mean, there is a tomorrow beyond tomorrow. You know, if we're talking big picture, you aren't just talking about Rutgers and Penn State. I mean, what do you have beyond this year? You can start finding that out now, too, because I think we can see very clearly that they didn't get a good read from that in camp. They didn't get a good read from that practicing against one another.
Sure.
Why not get a better read from that playing against other teams to really, really see, all right, get a start to really seeing, what do we really have right now? What do we need to compensate for? The transfer market, the portal is going to be booming.
It's going to be nuts.
There's going to be an opportunity to really address shortcomings on rosters. You're going to have space because some of your guys are going to leave, and there are going to be a lot of guys in the portal looking around for spots to fill. And so starting to get an idea of what you have now, I think is, especially for a team in Michigan's position, I think is a good idea.
I mean, I think that's fine. I think that you need to start with something more. I think I hate sounding like an old guy here, but like there is some truth to the fact that you need some fundamentals, that you need to have a base of what we do. Here's our defense, and here's what we do, and here's what we recruit to, and here's what we learn to here's what we practice, and here's the guys who can play it. If it's Kalel Mullings who can play it better than Josh Ross, fine. But if Josh Ross is not Josh Ross because he's trying to do Carlo Kemp's job, then that's where you're really breaking down. That's where you're having these massive the big fullback run right there, like, or the 9 yard untouched run into the end zone, like, where those plays, when you watch them, those are guys screwing up because they're trying to do other people's jobs, and you cannot have that in your defense. And on offense, like, Cade McNamara came in and he had one great drive. He had a second drive that wasn't great. So I don't know what he's got. That's it's literally all I've ever seen of him, except for, you know, the spring game in like the way back dark ages or whatever, right? So we don't know. I don't know what that guy has. I don't know what they're seeing in practice. If they're seeing that he's got a better command of the offense, or that he can execute reads, and they've been taking reads out of the offense because Joe's not making them, I don't know. I don't know. That's got to be their decision. But I want it based off of program values and who's the best out there running what we do, and starts with knowing what the hell we do. I don't know what we do anymore. We mentioned that quorum thing. Like, I'm gonna go on a long monologue, but I'm gonna be done here. But like the quorum thing, like Brian said, that we don't have a read for that, right? Where he's running outside, we have a read. We've seen them run that. They ran that in the spring game a year ago. It's in the offense. Run your offense.
Yeah, I think that one of the things that may be a harsh reality is, you know, refining what they do might mean just trying to do fewer things. I think they try to change up based on opponent. They try to be, you know, I mean, that's the concept. The idea is that based on how they play you, that's going to dictate what we run, I think, is the philosophy. And I just don't know that they are to the point where they can vary that much. They can vary game plan and what they try to do from week to week as much, because guys, the lack of execution suggests that, man, maybe they just got to focus on fewer things and do what they do regardless of who the opponent is. Like, you know, if they run pin and pulls well, then regardless of who they see, that needs to be in. You know, I'm just throwing that out there as one thing. I'm not suggesting that that's the case, but that's kind of my point. I mean, you know, seeing something in the game plan one week and not seeing it in the game plan the next week might not be what they can do right now with all the new faces and, again, the lack of execution that we've seen. So that might be a harsh and sad reality for them. It might lead to them running plays into looks that aren't ideal, but that's kind of where we are, I think. I think that's kind of where we are, where you focus on fewer things and get good at, to your point, Seth, about having a floor, get good at a few things. We know we're going to at least be able to block the right guy on this play, step the right direction on this play, because we drill it all the time. And it might not be an ideal look that we do these things into, but we're at least going to do it right. They might blow us up, but it's not going to be because we made a mistake. I think that's where they are.
Yeah, I mean, you could have a few things that have a few counters, and that's it. I think what you're saying is they're trying to do everything, and I think I agree. And like, so they've been incorrect on their adjustments for certain. Whatever their scouting is, they certainly didn't scout Indiana, because Indiana blitzes you off the edges. What do they not have in the offense? Any edge attacks.
See, but I guess I look at that, and I watch the game, and this kind of gets to another issue that I have. I saw a couple of those corner plays, and they weren't blitzes. Like the one that they hit for tackle for a loss, that wasn't a blitz. That was a trap corner. They just didn't block, and they tried to get to the perimeter a few times. And it's like, you know, basic things that you think should be executed on a on an every game basis not being executed. Okay, so why can't you do that? You know, why is it not a game in, game out thing? And the only thing that I can think of is, are you repping it enough? Is there too much focus on other things? Because that should be something that you can count on. And I'm no coach, so I don't know the answer. I can just tell you what I see from a lay perspective on the outside. You watch these games and you'll see quite often one guy just completely blow his assignment, and it's not the same guy. So if you have one guy blowing his assignment all the time and it's not the same guy, what that says to me is that to Brian's point, is that you have a group that just really right now collectively doesn't understand enough what they're doing. And if that's the case, then maybe you're doing a little too much. And maybe by scaling back, scaling it down, you can at least repeat execution of fewer plays. That's the only thing that I could come up with from a lay perspective, guys. I'll give you a perfect example in the break that we'll show you on that fourth and goal. It's like, man, really? I mean, this, you got to believe that they ran this right in practice, because you wouldn't call a play in a game that you weren't executing in practice, right? And if that's the case where it doesn't carry over to the field, then maybe you got to just rep that more. And in order to rep that more, you got to rep other things less. And I think that's where they are when you talk about finding what they do. So we'll get to that. I want more from you. I can sense you guys wanting to get over to hockey. So.
Or anything.
I will certainly oblige, and we will talk about other things unless you have some other football
points. No. Let's get to this ad break.
We got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, the ticket.
Clear on the radio.
I wonder if X can make the Lakers. Probably not.
Probably not.
I did enjoy the Pistons draft last night.
I did too.
They should have taken Tillman instead of the center they got. Seriously, if you want to, if the idea is that this guy is a defensive center, then I'm taking Tillman over virtually anybody in this draft. But it was they did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I think they drafted all upside. They're definitely rebuilding. They took on a couple bad contracts. Like we have a plan finally, and it's been a long time since I felt the Pistons had a plan.
All right. So one of the guys kind of tipped me up, because I wondered in the moment what happened, and one of the guys said immediately, "Tight end missed his block." Missed it is the wrong word, and so we went back and telestrated it. I was looking for this play in particular because it was...
But that's not the only problem on that play. There's also a linebacker who both Mason and Zinter block. So
Zinter stops on his pull.
Mm-hmm.
Zinter stops on his pull. So let me pull it up here. But I think he stops on his pull because the tight end screwed up.
Yeah, but the tight end has a different guy entirely.
Right. When we see the end zone.
Mason gets that guy, though. Yeah.
Right. So this will give you the idea. So the tight end is supposed to hit this six on his outside shoulder. And then, as you talked about, Zinner comes around, and this linebacker Mason is going to pick him up. But when Schoonmaker does what he does, I think it throws – an inexperienced guy and Zinner off. He's like, oh, shoot. It just blows everything up. So maybe I'm not supposed to go outside here. Maybe I'm supposed to get this guy coming, you know, shooting his B-gap here. Maybe that's what I'm supposed to do. And it just completely blows everything up. And you can see on this play, where are you going? Where are you going right here? Mm-hmm. It just completely blows everything up. If he steps the right way, then maybe this doesn't throw off a young player to the point in the way that it did, and he just goes around like he's supposed to and gets whatever is outside, and then Mason can come up and blow up the linebacker like he's supposed to. But when Schoonmaker steps wrong, there's a cascading effect from that point on. And the problem is, there are things like that all the time.
Yeah, they don't do well at all when the opponent does a gap exchange. So that end is going to be forced there, and Schoonmaker just doesn't expect it, right? So anytime someone on the defense stunts or, I mean, in pass rush or against the run, Michigan's offensive linemen are not reading it and seeing it.
That was something they were really good at last year. And I think,
well, I mean, they had four offensive
right. Well,
they had five NFL offensive linemen who currently aren't playing. So
right. And you're going from Michael Onwenu, who is an All-American or playing at an All-American level and maybe the rookie of the year in the NFL this year, to Zach Zinner, who's a true freshman.
He was All-American for half a season, and then he was just okay in the back half. But I mean, he was good. Don't get me wrong. But he wasn't. He fell off a little.
Okay.
But no.
Okay. Instead of
this is pedantry, I admit. I'm sorry.
The NFL rookie of the year versus a true freshman.
All right. I mean, it's just really, I don't really see much hope either now or in the long term, because the things that we've seen have kind of been a problem with the program for many years, and I don't expect that really to change. Because there's going to be more coaching turnover. It's going to be more recruiting holes. We'll see.
I'd love to hear about recruiting, because that seems like it's actually not doing too bad.
Yeah, what happened there? It's the strangest thing.
Mm-hmm. Am I correct that the players are basically just doing it themselves? And
doing what?
Recruiting themselves.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting together and getting these 2022 guys on.
And we're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider, Sports Talk 1050, WTKA, online at WTKA.com. MGO Blog Roundtable. So before we move on to talking hockey, we're getting some requests, Brian, for Brian Cook, the athletic director.
What? Oh.
Hey, man. The people are asking for it.
Well, the first thing I'd do is I'd fix BTN Plus. So that it's actually a good broadcast. The difference between watching Notre Dame hockey on stream and watching Michigan hockey on stream is vast. And I think Michigan should aspire to at least be as good at Notre Dame in this department. If I'm in charge, I'm making a coaching change after the season. I don't exactly know who you're looking at there, because there's not really a slam dunk candidate. Obviously, Urban Meyer is right out. Obviously, Hugh Freeze is right out. So you're looking at Matt Campbell, Luke Fickell, if he can overcome the nausea he must feel at that idea. Because, I mean, it's year six, right? And all the things that have happened in the first few games, you could kind of see coming if you were the doomiest version of a Michigan fan. Cornerback recruiting's been questionable. Defensive tackle recruiting's been questionable. Quarterback development has been questionable. So, I mean, I don't really see a reason to bring back a guy for a lame duck year or extend him. And I know that's a tough thing to say, but I mean,
yeah, I all I can tell you is, to this point, I've heard nothing to suggest that he won't be extended. Nothing to suggest that he won't be. Now, that doesn't mean that there won't be changes. And I mean, remains to be seen. But after watching consecutive years where Drevno and then Pep Hamilton, two guys that Jim had long-standing connections to be cycled out, that tells me anything is on the table as far as staff changes are concerned. And I know the response rebuttal is there have been a lot of changes already. I'm just reacting to what I hear. And I've heard nothing to suggest that anything but an extension is coming for Jim Harbaugh. Now, that doesn't mean that he won't listen to overtures from the NFL this year. Now, that's not a reflection of anything that I've heard behind the scenes about what he's telling people. So I want to make that clear. I'm just saying I don't know what the reaction is going to be this time around if NFL overtures are made. Will he be more receptive? There's nothing to suggest that he is looking that way right now. But let's see how this season finishes. You know, will how the season finishes affect his outlook? And if it does, then you're in a position where, you aren't paying a $10 million buyout, and you're making that move. Either way, do I think that we'll see some differences next year? I think that's likely. I think that's likely. I just don't know to what degree.
And like, as you mentioned, they've made a lot of changes already, and this is where they are. So why would the next wave be the difference maker? It just doesn't. kind of hard to see it turning around here.
All right. So gave the people what they wanted. You wanted Brian the AD, you got Brian the AD. All right, let's go over to some hockey, where as expectations go, right, the X-Men, it's only two games. I get it. But man, Brian, you talk these guys up like this is one of the all-time great Michigan freshman classes. And for two games, they pretty much looked like it.
Yeah, the level of domination Michigan was able to sustain against a team that would have been in the tournament last year if there was a tournament. We haven't seen that for a long time. Now, Arizona State does tend to get outshot when they play high-end teams. Their Corsi last year, which is just shots attempted, your ratio there was 47%, but Michigan was at 68% Corsi for the weekend, which is crazy. The national leader last year was Minnesota State at 59%. So that's how tilted the ice was, is that 70% of the shot attempts in those two games were from Michigan. And the quality of those shot attempts was also vastly different, because a lot of Arizona States were just like trying to get it on net just to get that shot number up. So, exceeded expectations. You know, you're a little bit nervous whenever you have spent literally years hyping up a bunch of kids as the savior of a hockey program, but so far so good. Owen Power looks incredible. Kent Johnson looks incredible. Matty Beniers, who I will manage to pronounce correctly at some point before his tenure is over, looked great. And I mean, that was just good fortune for Michigan, because he was going to go to Harvard, and Harvard was making noises like they weren't going to have a hockey season, and he's in his draft year, so he needs to go somewhere. And he lands at Michigan, and that's a cherry on top right there. So Wisconsin is this weekend. They have a transfer goalie who they're playing over the guy who was really bad last year. They swept Notre Dame in their opening series. They have a lot of talent. Like Michigan, they had a bad year last year, but a lot of those guys are back. They have a couple first-round picks on the roster, another guy who's probably going to win the first round this year. So this is going to be like a very good test to see where Michigan is versus a team that can skate with them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think like the big question after last week was, you know, was this the Minnesota game, right? Like, was ASU just really bad? First of all, there were two games, not one. So we actually got to see them after, like, you know, a day off. And I thought the second game, even though it was just 3-0, I thought we dominated more in the second game than the first game. It was just like, I think Alex Drain, a guy who writes for us, said that it felt like Michigan was on the power play when they were 5-on-5. And then, yeah, when they were on 4-on-5, when Michigan was on the penalty kill, they got as many shots as Arizona State did.
Yes. So it's overwhelming talent for a team that has a couple of good players but doesn't really have a whole lot in the way of NHL draft picks and seems a little stuck in the mud, and that's going to be something that we're going to see if Michigan can maintain this against a team that might be pretty good this year in Wisconsin.
Yeah, I asked Mel when we had him on this week that behind-the-back pass from Kent Johnson.
Oh, yes.
It's like, man, when you see something like that, how do you react as a coach? Because he can do it. Now, do you advise it? Probably not. But if he can do it, do you just let him go? Do you just say, hey, go be you? Or do you try to have to corral it? He said it's a balancing act when you have guys that creative. You don't want to take away their creativity because they're special in that way. But he said, you know, we are definitely going to have to maybe lower some of the risk in there, you know, coach that up a little bit. But man, you can even hear from him like, dude, sometimes you just got to let him go. Just got to let him go.
Yeah, Michigan did give up a 3-on-0 break on Friday. So that's less of that, maybe. Maybe have at least one guy back.
Mel made reference to. Because I also asked him about your point. I think I went to look up the stats, the number of shorthanded shots they got. I think they got 8 in the couple of games. I said, Mel, that's aggressive. He said, yeah, it is. He said, but we have those kinds of players. So he said, you know, we got to be smart with it. But, you know, when you have players that are this skilled, sometimes you got to let them go. It was kind of the point.
Yeah, and then they still have that checking line. They have the Moyle, Van Wy, and Raby line. that's been together for, this is their third year together now, and they listed them second on the line chart, even though this is the one line on the team that isn't going to get rated by the NHL. And their performance was not that different from the veterans' performance. And this is something that happened under Red, is that you'd always have one or two guys who were juniors or seniors poke their heads through and really become like credible scoring line players late in their career. You know, Scooter Vaughn, I think, is the best example, who moved from D to forward, scored like 10 goals as a senior. You know, Rolfs, they just always had guys like this coming through. And then there was this kind of interregnum where, you know, Red was kind of tailing off at the end of his career, and they hadn't really established Mel's culture yet. And I think that checking line being as good as it is the last couple of years is something. And I think they've even taken a step forward too. So if you got the young guys who are really performing, and then you have, you know, a veteran core who can settle things down, maybe you put them out there against the opposition's best line just so that you have some guys who are defensively responsible out there and not 17. You know, I think that's a really good combination. And then you have Strauss Mann, who was 939 last year as a goaltender, fended off a 3-on-0 breakaway in one of his rare opportunities this weekend. And one of the problems with Wisconsin last year, who a lot of people are comparing this Michigan team to, is that they had probably the worst goaltending in the country. And Michigan might have the best. So, yeah, we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, we haven't even seen Portillo back there yet.
Yeah, Mel made a great point about that. About that breakaway, he said, "No, the guy on the breakaway had more goals in his career than we had returning as a team." So he said it wasn't like this, just any breakaway. This is like their guy.
Yeah, this is the guy named Johnny Walker. So I mean, he's really name and image. He's waiting for it. Get it in before Johnny Walker graduates.
Yeah. So he said, "Hey, that shows you how good Strauss Mann is." You know, it makes me think, this only gets back to football in a good way, guys. Not it gets back to football in a good way.
We are having this nice hockey talk.
I'm making a comparison between, I mean, this outstanding freshman class that they brought in, and sort of, you know, juxtaposing that with at least what we're hearing coming out of this recruiting weekend for football. Now, so far cry from guys being consummated and in the fold. But I ask you guys the question, because I know you follow recruiting. I haven't seen anything like what we're hearing coming out of that weekend, where Michigan just gets demoralized on the field. You have all these guys on campus, albeit on their own. You know, they came together as a recruiting weekend on their own. But coming out of it, the number of guys that are rah-rah Michigan, we see the opportunity to go in and do something special together. I mean, if you had one guy saying that, you know, I can see how one guy might have that big picture perspective. Hey, it's a down year, early playing time. I can see it being available. That's why I like it. But you had, like, every guy saying that coming out of the weekend. And in the case of the 2022 corners, I mean, you got the number one corner in the country, the number three corner in the country, a top 247 safety, who I think they're going to get in a couple of weeks, and Isaac Thompson. And if dominoes are going to fall, he would be the first one. We just have to wait to see if the others do too. But I just, you know, following recruiting like you guys do, are you not surprised by that too? Have you?
I would say yes, I am surprised. I mean, usually you don't see five-star cornerbacks watch a 49-11 game and be like, I like the team that scored 11. That's, on the other hand, I mean, they're right. There is playing time available for them. So,
yeah, I mean, these guys are, you're talking about people who have long-term Michigan connections, right? Like son of a former player who played for Bo and Mueller, and then another guy has like been a, you know, a Michigan fan his entire life, and like, you know, he's friends with Donovan Green, Green Warren's family and everything. Like there are reasons that that they have connections to Michigan in the first place. So, you know, you're talking about guys who are Michigan fans to start with, and I think that's been a problem with their cornerback recruiting, is that they've had the opposite luck recently, that like they just haven't had a lot of guys who were born looking at Michigan. So then you have to have a reason to look at Michigan, and you know, they just lost some of those battles.
Isaac Thompson didn't. His dad played for Michigan State, and Michigan State beat Michigan this year. I'm like, what? What are we talking about? I even asked his dad. I said, man, so You just watched Michigan lose 49-11. You watched your alma mater beat Michigan. What if your son wants to go to Michigan? Are you okay with that? He said, I'll be wearing a block M. This is like the Twilight Zone. Because, I asked the question just to make sure this isn't like a big troll, right? You feel like right. It's a big troll job that all these guys are talking about Michigan in such glowing terms off of such a bad showing on the field. But, you know, I think it's the power of all those guys being there together and talking about if we go as a group, if we go together, you know, I don't know. I'm gonna come up with a name for them. We certainly can if they do it. I'd be glad to try to find the X-Men equivalent for that group if they could come up, if they actually follow through. But it'll be interesting to see if it comes to fruition. I feel like it has a greater chance of happening than I certainly did before they came last weekend.
I think you've got to, I mean, you got to give credit to the players themselves. And I think back, like, remember the Wilton Spate class that, like, all came together that, like, one glorious February weekend where we almost killed Ace because he had to write all those things. Like, he was really good at, like, rallying all those guys to join the class, and they had an excitement inside the class. J.J. McCarthy has done probably the best job I've ever seen of a recruit leading the recruitment of the class. Like, if that guy goes on to his, you know, after his NFL career is over and everything, and after he's coached Stanford to a Pac-10 championship, he should definitely come back here and be recruiting coordinator at Michigan.
Yeah, he's definitely different. You know what someone said after watching his videos, and I had never made this comparison, just as a passionate speaker, speaking from the heart in a way that appeals to people. They said, you know, he has some... He's Tebow-esque in that way. And I had made, not as a player, they're totally different quarterbacks, but just as a motivational speaker. He has that motivational speaker vibe to him, in my opinion. That's one of the things mm-hmm. that I always found about Tebow, watching him. I mean, even going back to high school when he was a Michigan recruit, I remember the first time interviewing Tim Tebow down at the Army All-American Combine. And this had to be before his junior year, and thinking, man, this dude just sounds really freaking mature, right? Not knowing that Tim Tebow was going to be Tim Tebow down the line, just knowing he was a big-time quarterback that Lefty was recruiting at that moment. And lo and behold, man, he was that kind of lure, that kind of motivational guy for his team. Maybe JJ will be that too.
Mm-hmm. And I'm leaving out Junior Colson too, who seems to be another one of those guys. And, you know, he's a legit prospect from Tennessee that the SEC was definitely going to have interest in. And he's been 100%, you know, go blue the whole time. So that's that when you have a couple guys like that in the class and they're, you know, really committed, I think it's easier to build around that. And I see it in the way that, like, Michigan's Michigan. So, like, if we lose Harbaugh and the coaches get changed around or whatever, you know, Michigan can still hire one of the best coaches out there. And Michigan's still going to have all the facilities. Michigan's still going to have access to the things that Michigan has access to. So, you know, unless you have an Ohio State offer, an Alabama offer, Michigan's a pretty good one.
See, so we just had that discussion. It was a positive one about football, right? All right, so... Now, maybe this one won't be so positive. I always have to ask you guys about the upcoming game. Give me a winner and a score, Brian Cook, Michigan versus Rutgers. And understand, this is a game that Michael Dwumper has had circled on his calendar. Michigan has been struggling on the interior of the offensive line. On the offensive line, period, I would say, but certainly on the interior. What do you see happening in this game?
Michael Dwumper gets 6 sacks. Michigan loses to Rutgers, 35-2.
Come on, man.
What? All right, fine. 27-2.
Seth? I think we can score on this defense. Michigan loses 27-25.
I think it'll be that kind of game. But I think it'll be that kind of game where it's, you know, it's close. I do.
Rutgers has a lot of trick plays prepared. And they emptied the drawer against Ohio State. They used a whole bunch of them against Indiana. So I gotta imagine there's more. Even if they just run through the ones that they've shown already, you know, they're gonna tag Michigan a couple times because Michigan's not really paying attention to their own jobs right now.
I mean, it's really, can Michigan defend downfield without getting flags?
Yeah. I gotcha. All right, fellas. Hopefully the mood will be better next week, right?
Nope.
Fingers
nope.
crossed.
Nope.
Fingers
nope.
crossed. wait a minute. There is no next week. So it'll be... So,
oh, yeah.
Yeah, there is no next week. So it'll be a couple of weeks.
By which point we'll be talking basketball.
There you go. You guys have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. Thanks to all of you who joined us on the stream. We'll be back tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.